The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. As primary season continues, we'll look at the state of the right.
The right is definitely energized about the coming midterm election and has a real advantage and enthusiasm.
I'll look at the map and the factions within the GOP with Molly Hemingway.
The Republican Party has gone through a transformation in the last 5 to 6 years.
Texas Senator John Cornyn was part of a delegation to Ukraine.
Important for us to show up and demonstrate our support for President Zelensky and the Ukrainians.
And Finland makes it clear it would like to join NATO.
The Finns have a big army, 280,000 combat-capable, well-trained soldiers. These are military forces that have high capability.
We've got all this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with the primaries for the fast-approaching midterms. On Tuesday, we saw an upset in North Carolina. Scandal-battered incumbent Republican Representative Madison Cawthorn lost his primary battle to State Senator Chuck Edwards. The Senate race in Pennsylvania is in overtime. We'll catch up on that one soon. For more, I turn to Matthew Continetti, now with the American Enterprise Institute. What is the state of the right?
Well, I think broadly the right is still motivated by a lot of populist energy. It's still broadly supportive of President Trump and his agenda. The Trump endorsement matters, but it might not matter all that much. And I also think we can say that the right is definitely energized about the coming midterm election and has a real advantage and enthusiasm.
Now, I just had on Steve Kornacki, and I told him I'm going to make a call, the earliest call for November, and that is that Josh Shapiro wins the governorship in Pennsylvania because Mastriano is just too far out there. Do you agree with me on that, Matt?
Well, you know, Mastriano is definitely what you might call ultra-MAGA, right? Or what Biden might call ultra-MAGA.
You betcha.
He is more MAGA than Trump. Trump came in with the late endorsement of Mastriano, I think mainly to burnish Trump's endorsement record, because Mastriano had a double-digit lead when Trump endorsed for the final week. Here's the problem, you know, for the Democrats, is that they thought Donald Trump was unelectable too, Hugh. And because of the environment in 2016, because of missteps by their candidate, Hillary Clinton, Trump became the president of the United States. So I want to leave it out of the realm of possibility that Mastriano wins. So he definitely starts off, I think, at a disadvantage because of his reputation, and also because the Republican Party is very divided over his candidacy, and many, many Republicans in Pennsylvania are unenthused by him, to say the least.
You know, there are a lot of people divided over the 2020 election as well. I am one who thought the election was over the day after. There are people I know, and Salem Media helped produce the movie 2000 Mules, and Dinesh's movie has done very, very well, and they believe that there was a lot of cheating. I don't, but the point is that it divides the party. How much should the Republican Party and the right generally be looking forward as opposed to backwards, Matt Continetti?
Well, I'm a big believer, Hugh, that politics is about the future, not the past. Now, I'm a conservative, so I love the past. I think we can draw lessons from the past. I want to preserve a lot of the past. But politics, it is about what you're going to do for voters tomorrow, not what happened yesterday. I do think it's important that the Republican candidates focus on kitchen table issues in 2022. And there are serious issues. I mean, we see from the voters that inflation is their number one concern. They want to have feel empathy from their candidates. They want to hear solutions, potential solutions from candidates on the matter of inflation. Things like crime, things like the border, all of these are major factors in people's decision-making, everyday Americans who are getting up and going to work and not thinking all that much about politics, certainly not thinking all that much about what happened in 2020, I do think a forward-leaning agenda is the way for Republicans to win this year.
As we do look ahead, I want to look at the map, quite literally, as a recent redistricting efforts have backfired for Democrats. Molly Hemingway of The Federalist was a guest on my program. Redistricting has not gone the way Democrats hoped it would because even New York's highest court said the plan they produced stunk and they threw it out. Are you surprised by how well Republicans have done in the courts of New York?
Certainly surprised by how it's gone in New York since the courts there are pretty biased against Republicans. I actually don't think Republicans did that great overall on redistricting. It was something that they were likely to have some losses, but did a lot of decisions not go their way. It's a tough battle. You have to fight for it each time. And state courts, as you know, can be pretty partisan and work to preserve partisan power. And it's important because it's just one of the most important things for having free and fair elections and having the democratic aspects of our republic work is to have good districts that are fair and represent the people.
Illinois and California are big D wins. Florida and Ohio, if the map holds up in Ohio, and I think it is, are good R wins. All told, I think the Republicans, according to National Journal, have about a 2.5 to 3 seat pickup. And that's before the wave, Molly. So I am happy. I'm confident.
And it's good to remember that Republicans had an unnaturally good redistricting the previous decade. And so there was going to be some correction for that anyway.
Now, Molly, you're one of the fairest people I know on the center right. And I don't know what your opinions are about Republican National Committee debates, but I think Ronna McDaniel and David Bossi have done a good thing by blowing off the Presidential Debate Commission. But they will run between 12 and 15 debates themselves in the primaries. The rule set will matter a lot. What are your initial thoughts on what a fair set of rules look like for those debates? If we have a number of candidates, as I predict in the Washington Post, we're going to have a number of candidates.
I don't know. I actually think the most important thing is, as you know, finally standing strong against this ridiculous thing that we've had for decades, where you have moderators who are so partisan and openly biased that they don't even recognize their own bias. And they treat Republican candidates like second-class citizens. The most important thing is to keep left-wing propaganda media types away from Republican debate. It's not fair to treat Republican voters like second-class citizens, which is what we've seen in our debates for decades.
I am pretty certain that Reince Priebus began the transition to what you're talking about, and I think Ronna McDaniel will finish it. And that the networks will not control. They may broadcast, they may carry, but they may not control the content, that the RNC is going to pick the moderators and the moderators will work it out.
Well, and it's not even representing, it's raising issues that are of concern to those people.
Right.
And sometimes having a hostile moderator is a good way to get good answers. The problem is when the hostile moderator is only hostile against one side. Think about how it feels as a Republican to watch these debates. They're bringing up issues of interest to the left. They're asking gotcha questions framed in a way to help the left. And so conservative voters who are trying to figure out what's going on or which candidate to vote for, the questions they want asked are never asked.
Molly, you know? I also believe in randomized seating charts so that if you've got 10 candidates, you can put them on a stage, but you randomize where they stand. You don't do it by height and you don't do it by polling. Polling last night was wrong again. They had David McCormick at 21%. He's at 31%. They had him in third place in the last four polls. He's tied for first in a race that won't be decided for days, maybe weeks. They are never right. They are never right, Molly.
It's particularly a problem with primaries. So polling
Polling
is wrong all the time. Primary polling is actually very difficult to do. It's difficult to get right. You're dealing with people who can kind of make last-minute, the voters themselves make last-minute changes in their decisions, and so you have a very good point there that it should not be set by polling. I don't know about completely randomized. You can have so many candidates that you don't want to just mix the more legitimate candidates with people who are just running for a particular one issue they want to focus on or that don't have the support either financially or with the people. So there should be some constraints on.
I hope you think about it. Molly, talk to me about the party. I wrote for the Washington Post today. We have Ultra MAGA, MAGA Lite, and everybody else.
I do think that people sometimes make a mistake in building it all around, in building all of what they're saying about what's happening in the party around Trump. The Republican Party has gone through a transformation in the last 5 to 6 years. I think most everyone actually recognizes the need to update policy positions. You look in Pennsylvania, it is really interesting. You have the Trump-endorsed candidate, who a lot of conservatives did not find to be conservative enough. You have the ultra-MAGA candidate of Kathy Barnett. Those two together, I think, you know, I think they're probably got a majority of the votes. I'm also not sure there's like a tremendously huge distinction between these three groups. It's more like streams of thought within the party that predominate or don't. I do worry that the party doesn't understand that the voters are ready to change how the Republican Party has done business. They're looking for much more to be done when the Republican Party takes power. They want to have a clear agenda about the things that concern them, whether it's about the control big tech has over our discourse or taking on China. They don't want to just have rhetoric. They want to have actual action.
Now, Molly, you're not old enough. You wouldn't remember the 1984 There's a Bear in the Woods ad. It only aired once, but it got a lot of play as a legendary ad. Some people, there's a bear in the woods. Some people say it's not dangerous. I think the Republican Party is united around there's a dragon in the air. And I think that 2024 will be the one thing that everyone agrees about is that Joe Biden has hollowed out the military and we are not in a position to deter China. What do you think about that?
Well, I think these were some of the debates that we started seeing in the 2015 and 2016 debate stage on how the Republican Party takes on foreign policy. I think that division is actually very serious and significant right now. You had the early stage of the war in Ukraine leading to just massive popular support for involvement there as people start thinking through what it means to be involved in a long-term war there, including what that means about how well-positioned we are to take on China. I think you will see much more vibrant debate going forward and less of it's sort of just reflexive acceptance of whatever the generals on TV are saying needs to be done in Ukraine. But it does seem that many people you're seeing, again, in these different streams, everyone seems to recognize China is a threat. This is so different than what we thought as a party or as a nation in 2015 and 2016, but people finally seem to have awakened to the challenge there, the economic and national security challenges there. And so I do hope you'll see much better ideas and more specific ideas about how to take on China. You know, Biden hasn't been a complete disaster on that in that he kept some of our tariffs and whatnot that are there. But he has just been asleep at the wheel for the threat there. And, you know, we keep hearing like there's going to be some new big policy statement released for Biden versus, you know, about how to take on China. And we're still waiting.
Coming up.
The Finns have a big army. They have a million reserves and 280,000 combat capable, well-trained soldiers. These are military forces that have high capability.
The Town Hall Review returns in a minute.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Russia's unprovoked war on Ukraine continues, even though it's less ubiquitous in American media's new coverage. Lack of wall-to-wall media coverage should not be taken as an indication that the conflict is in any way less consequential. Indeed, the next chapter of the New World Order is being shaped right now. Senator John Cornyn is recently back from a diplomatic visit to the war-torn nation. He joined my friend Mark Davis from AM 660, The Answer in Dallas.
Important for us to show up and demonstrate our support for President Zelensky and the Ukrainians. You know, this we've been through a period of about 75 years of relative peace in the world. And, you know, it's my dad fought in World War II. You know, we all have relatives, parents, grandparents who did. And they thought they were fighting a war to end all wars. But unfortunately, Mr. Putin didn't get the memo and is really risking a potential breakout of a conflict far beyond Ukraine, including NATO. And it's a dangerous situation.
Let me share a moment that I had on the show the day it was clear, and all I heard first that was Senator McConnell had gone, and then I learned of the expanded travel entourage. Maybe it caught me on a weird day, because I so want Ukraine to prevail. I'm fine with all kinds of help going that way. I'm starting to wonder about the blank check and how many billions we're going to funnel over there. And I also was noticing that anybody starting to ask those questions was like getting hammered as if they were a Putin propagandist. I didn't like that. Help people out, because look, I am good with this package, but how many packages are there going to be, and what are we going to be asked to do?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think anybody does. Nobody expected this to last as long as it's lasted, and thanks to the leadership of President Zelensky and the willingness of the Ukrainian people to fight for their own country, you know, Putin has to be frustrated, angry, and disappointed. Obviously, he was hoping he could walk into Kiev without a shot being fired, much as the Taliban walked into Afghanistan. But Mr. Zelensky had different plans. The problem is, Mark, you know, Bob Gates, the former Secretary of Defense, said our long holiday from history is over. And, you know, like you and so many other of your listeners, I try to learn from history, and because history does repeat itself. And I think Putin is threatening not only Ukraine, but to engage in a military conflict with NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which has been responsible for the longest period of peace that we've had on the planet for, like I said, the last 70, 75 years. So it's a very dangerous situation, and Putin has these dreams of restoring the Russian Empire. So, you know, he's driven by this fantasy, and it is, like I said, very dangerous. But I think we have no choice but to help the Ukrainians defend themselves and try to make sure that this doesn't break out into a broader military conflict and perhaps World War III.
Is it possible that a best case scenario is some kind of negotiated settlement where it becomes clear to him he's not going to be able to make the entirety of Ukraine back under their big Russian umbrella at all, but we give him Donbass, a couple of other regions in eastern Ukraine, Zelensky agrees with it to end the war? Is that a possible end game?
Well, I think it's important to let President Zelensky and the Ukrainians make that decision and not be forced upon them, because, you know, Putin started this in 2014 when he invaded Crimea, another part of Ukraine, and the United States and our allies did nothing. So he thought he could take another bite and another bite and another bite. And like I said, he's driven by this fantasy of the restoration of the Russian Empire, and he wants to be remembered for restoring it. So I don't know that we have any confidence that he would stop, even if Ukraine decided to sacrifice part of its territory. Obviously, he didn't stop with Crimea, and so that's why I think this is so dangerous. And I still remember a hearing in the Armed Services Committee years ago. General David Petraeus was there, and he said the most important question to ask when it comes to a military conflict is, how does this end? And I'm afraid we don't know the answer to that yet.
One of the key voices I trust on military issues is retired Admiral James Stavridis. The former Supreme Allied Commander at NATO was a guest on my program. Let's go to this story from the Times of London, Admiral. Russian battalion wiped out trying to cross River of Death. Ukrainians saw it, they spotted it, they followed it with drones, and they hit 50 vehicles with precision munitions. Now, my friend General Spies, retired United States Marine Corps, tells me we have Excaliburs that can drop an artillery shell on a moving target from hundreds of miles away. I didn't know that. Apparently, crossing a river is not going to be an option very much longer in Ukraine.
Yeah, anytime a land unit has to encounter a terrain obstacle like that, they have to slow down, they have to get organized, they have to maneuver, and they become vulnerable.
NATO is about to expand to Finland and Sweden. You were the Allied Supreme Commander of NATO. Are you going like this? Hooray, we got the Finns in. Or are you saying, oh, my God, the Finnish border with Russia expands my theater of operations by 50%?
It is two thumbs up. And if I had other thumbs to offer, I would make them. We have got to get the Finns and the Swedes into NATO. The Finns have a big army. They have the largest number of artillery pieces in Europe. They have a million reserves and 280,000 combat-capable, well-trained soldiers. These are military forces that have high capability. And over on the Swedish side, they are highly technically capable. And so they build their own fighters, the Gripen. It's a superb airplane, kind of like a Hornet, like some of the great Navy people we know fly. They build submarines.
I mean, that's what I was. I thought so. Yeah. How big is the naval element of these two countries, and are they integrated with NATO already?
It is sizable, and they are integrated in terms of number of capable warships. It's in the dozens, and they're focused on a relatively small maritime battle space, right? The Baltic Sea, and to some degree up in the Arctic. So. In terms of number of ships for geographic area, highly capable, both of them. They operate alongside us. Real capability in the air, on the land, absolutely at sea. Nothing but a plus up for NATO.
How quickly, as a Supreme Commander, would you integrate Finn and Swede generals and admirals into your command structure? How quickly does that follow?
It'll happen almost instantly, and there's a funny expression for this. It's called Star Wars, as in the number of stars you have on your shoulder. Each nation really wants those positions, so you have real competition. And I would, if I were Supreme Allied Commander, looking at those two nations come in, I'd say, look, I've got to have a Swedish 2-star, a Finnish 1-star. I want them on my staff. I want one up in our command structure in the north. You might even see a 3-star Finn or Swede come in. Those Star Wars are grinding already, I guarantee it. Let me tell you, if they ask to come in on Wednesday, we ought to bring them in on Friday. They're that good.
There's more to my conversation with Admiral Jim Stavridis. So go to townhallreview.com. Coming up, President Biden's speech in the aftermath of the racist and brutal killing of 10 in Buffalo.
I hate that through the media and politics, the internet, has radicalized, angry, alienated, lost, and isolated individuals.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with the Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to DaybreakInsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's DaybreakInsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's DaybreakInsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Last weekend, late on a Saturday afternoon, a young man, 18 years old, entered a Tops grocery store in Buffalo, New York, and proceeded to murder 10 of the shoppers and workers, injured others. It was a location that he targeted because this gunman knew that the area was largely black. It was an evil act by a sick young man. President Biden visited Buffalo on Tuesday and spoke to the nation.
I hate that through the media and politics, the internet has radicalized, angry, alienated, lost, and isolated individuals into falsely believing that they will be replaced, that's the word, replaced by the other, by people who don't look like them, and who are therefore, in a perverse ideology that they possess and being fed, lesser beings. I and all of you reject the lie. I call on all Americans to reject the lie, and I condemn those who spread the lie for power, political gain, and for profit.
My friend Dennis Prager offered his take on what the president should have done.
I want to invite you to an alternate America, one governed by a president who loved this country, who was basically a decent human being, and who thought before opening his mouth, how can I do good for America, as opposed to only thinking, how can I harm the country for the sake of my party? Because the worse things are in America, the better things are for Democrats. The left lives on more and more Americans thinking ill of their country. So this America that I'm inviting you to has a president who would have gone to Buffalo and said essentially as follows: my fellow Americans, this is a fundamentally decent society. This sick young man represented an infinitesimally small part of our population. Sick people who believe in sick ideas are to be found in every corner of political life. It has always been so, and tragically will always be so. But fundamentally, this is a country that has phenomenally, successfully, uniquely successfully passed the test of the most multiracial, multireligious, multicultural, multinational country in the history of the world. And to say otherwise is to smear the greatest experiment in human diversity that has ever been engaged in. To my fellow Americans who are black Americans, this man represents such an infinitesimally small segment of the white population that it is important that you know that. It was as if those people in that supermarket were struck by lightning. These things are exceedingly rare in the United States. Okay? That's what a decent man. He's a thug. You know, I've never called a president a bad name in my 40 years of broadcasting. We have a thug for a president. He's always been a thug. He's the most corrupt president in American history. He's the most dishonest. He makes Donald Trump look like Honest Abe. For Donald Trump, America was sacred. For Joe Biden, America is a doormat. That's just the way it is, whatever you think of the personality of Donald Trump. The hate-filled speech that this president gave is unique in American history, except for all the other speeches Joe Biden has given on the subject. I cannot think of a parallel sin committed by an American president in my study of American history as to what this thug, this anti-American, self-preoccupied narcissist said in Buffalo.
Coming up, more on the Buffalo shooting.
Nobody's telling people to go out and shoot people. That is absolutely false.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The media coverage of the shooting in Buffalo developed in a predictable way. But because it was predictable does not mean it was responsible. In fact, media coverage of these highly charged incidents serves to inflame passions. Look only to the unrest we saw in 2020. Brandon Tatum is a new partner for the Salem Media Group. He's also a former police officer. His show is the Officer Tatum Show. Welcome aboard, Brandon.
I want to talk about, I wanted to get into the Buffalo situation. I want clip 15 when you guys have it. I want to get into this Buffalo situation. I know we talked about the Buffalo shooting yesterday. People have been talking about it all day. Listen to this clip, and then we're going to talk about it in more detail. Wrote a clip.
Television ratings with rhetoric that they know is false, they know is inflammatory, they know arouses passions, and they know is potentially deadly when it fills the ears and minds of susceptible, vulnerable people like this shooter in Buffalo, who hear it as a call to action. They don't hear it as rhetoric. They don't hear it as entertainment, infotainment, which is one way you could describe a lot of the shows on Fox, at least in the evening, as infotainment. But that's not the way people are hearing this stuff. They hear it as a call to action, and action, in this case, means killing people.
Oh, my God. Somebody help me pray for that man's soul. MSNBC should be ashamed of themselves for having that person on there saying those things. What call to action is loving your country causing you to do? Well, maybe the call of action to join the military and fight for your country, fight for your rights. Tucker Carlson and none of these people are giving a call to action to go and be violent against nobody. If you ask me, sometimes I think they're a little softer than what I would be in rhetoric and telling people that they should be bold in their stance. Nobody's telling people to go out and shoot people. That is absolutely false. And then they are the ones perpetuating lies. And if anybody's going to be radicalized, it's going to be radicalized from a party and a people and a network that spent all of their days telling you the world is over. The white man is bad. The insurrection of January 6th. They know for a fact. That was the weakest. If that was an insurrection on January 6th, that's the weakest insurrection I've ever seen in my life. When you got a grandma walking around with a selfie stick, taking selfies, dudes is going in there picking up podiums, sitting at desks, and they finish the vote in the same day. And they have no weapons. What kind of insurrection is that? Give me a freaking break. When they lie on Donald Trump day in and day out, talking about he said there's good people on both sides in the Charlottesville incident, that's a lie. They're stoking hatred and division. And Biden, these people, I just can't say it enough, but I know everybody listening to me right now can feel the passion that I feel about this subject matter. Joe Biden and his goons are the ones really pushing dangerous rhetoric. Conservatives are saying, don't teach our kids about CRT in school. Don't teach our kids to hate each other in school. Let them learn in an academic environment in college where there's more nuance and they can explain it better. A kindergarten shouldn't be looking at another black kindergarten wondering about slavery and reparations, or wondering whose ancestors were bad to whose ancestors. That's not what you do to young children. They should be learning how to read and all the other things that'll make them successful. But ladies and gentlemen, they are pushing this rhetoric. We say stop it. They are pushing that they want teachers to talk to your kids about sex in kindergarten. We're saying, hold the phone. Don't talk about my kids about that. I'm a grown man. I'm a grown man, grown woman. We are the parents of that child. We will talk to them when they are ready to be talked to or spoken to about issues like this. We don't need some teacher who's been radicalized to radicalize our children. And they claim it's us that are the problems. And then as soon as something happens, they put the guy's name up on the television. They glorify him as a deity because it matches their rhetoric. They wouldn't even be talking about this white kid that went and shot up people in Buffalo if he was black. So who's pushing what? Y'all giving him more coverage, and these other lunatics are looking at him and finding value in what he did from y'all's network. And then the black ones come out and y'all don't even give him no airtime. I'm gonna just say this as well. because I think this is a valid point to be made. Joe Biden is calling for gun control as he goes and visits in Buffalo, you know, after the shooting, deadly shooting. 10 people lost their lives, and a knucklehead that decided to be radicalized on 4chan or wherever he claimed he was radicalized. We can't even prove that to be true anyway. He could have made all that up. And how are you going to take the word, perceived words of a perceived manifesto from a nut job that's shooting people up? How do you know he didn't just say whatever words he thought would be famous as he goes and kills people just because he wanted to? But we can't take a minute to think this through. We have to jump right into a political agenda. But Joe Biden is running and quick to jump on gun control. Can somebody explain to me how gun control makes any sense whatsoever in the world when you are essentially eliminating these high-powered rifles? There's no such thing called an assault rifle. There's no such thing called an assault rifle. It doesn't exist. These, you could call them high-powered rifles. If you take them from society, 99.99% of the people that have AR-15s or have rifles, they're not killing people, ladies and gentlemen. Their rifles are probably collecting dust because they don't even touch them. And you're going to remove everybody's rifle because of the actions of one or two people. Well, therefore, we need to, no alcohol can be served on planet Earth anymore because some deranged people don't know how to handle the alcohol, start fighting and killing each other, driving their cars and running over people. So we should take alcohol from society completely. As a matter of fact, we should just take cars away. Forget your car. Go park your car on the side of the road because some knucklehead want to drive 140 miles per hour down a freeway and kill somebody while drinking. So everybody should lose privileges to driving a car. I guess you could put your kitchen knife up, any sharp object that you have, because more people die at the hands of sharp objects and hands and feet than they do at the hands of an AR-15. So I guess you need to cut your hands off and your feet. You know, I mean, you know how dumb that sounds? That's how dumb these people are acting. Removing guns from society isn't going to change a lunatic. They're just going to stab people to death. They're just going to use a handgun.
Coming up.
While Congress is trying to basically figure out what all is happening, they're sending pallets of baby formula to the border. And if that doesn't infuriate you, I don't know what will.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, we'll look at the horrific and racially motivated murder of 10 in Buffalo last weekend.
The biggest problem is not what this young man carried in his hands. It's actually what he carried in his heart.
And after 2 years of pandemic, it's hard to think of a sector that has fared worse than public education.
Parents in record numbers are pulling their kids out of the public schools.
J.D. Vance wins the Republican nomination for the Senate seat in Ohio.
Look, I'm 100% pro-life, and I'm proud to be.
Well, look at why the pro-life position has to be defended.
A whole human being is similar to a Polaroid photo. Everything that was necessary for the photo to realize its full development was already present when the photo got spit out.
All this and more. Be sure to join us.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The supply chain issues we have seen over the past 2 years have come as a surprise to most Americans. From the run on toilet paper 2 years ago to baby formula today, they are all unique in certain respects, and they are all somewhat related. The baby formula issue, though, is particularly alarming. Here's Mike Gallagher.
Pallets of baby formula being sent to illegals at facilities along our southern border, and American citizens can't get their hands on baby formula. That's really, really hard to comprehend. Pallets of baby formula are being sent to holding facilities at the border, according to Congressperson Kat Kamek, Republican from Florida. She said that in our own district at home, we cannot find baby formula, but she posted a video where there are pictures and images of pallets of food being sent to the border. A concerned Border Patrol agent brought it to her attention. The pictures come from the Ursula Processing Facility in Texas, where thousands are being housed and processed and then released. A Border Patrol agent for over 30 years contacted Congresswoman Kat Kamick and said, you will not believe the shipment I just brought in.
And this got sent to me by a Border Patrol agent this morning and said, this is disgusting. You will not believe this. They're receiving pallets and more pallets of baby formula at the border. This was taken at Ursula processing facility where thousands are being housed and processed and then released subsequently into the United States. So think about this. This is what America Last looks like. This is 100% what it looks like. And in response, Congress, we actually, before I even got these photos, we were working with our colleagues on the Energy and Commerce Committee and ranking member Kathy McMorris Rogers, who is doing a bang up job. She put together a letter that they're finalizing right now, going to the White House, going to the administration, demanding answers. And it is hands down one of the most frustrating experiences. So while Congress is trying to basically figure out what all is happening, they're sending pallets of baby formula to the border. And if that doesn't infuriate you, I don't know what will.
If that doesn't infuriate you, I don't know what will. I like the way she framed what the left and the Democrats embrace. America Last policies.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website at townhallreview.com. Sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers David Pouchon, Jacob Orduña, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.